Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
Hey, we are talking about expecting the unexpected theme this week, and you start off with the amazing statistic that there's a 75% chance that we will need assistance during our lifetime, and there's a way to work this into our estate planning?
Yeah, expecting the unexpected, so it's interesting that we get surprised by health incidences. We get surprised that we're going to have memory issues. We get surprised that we're going to need assistance at some point or another. And yet it shouldn't be a surprise. So I don't know what it is. Is it human nature in us that resists this idea that says, I am going to be...
Live forever.
Yeah, well, yeah, live forever. But also the idea that says, I'm going to need help. So if we look at it practically, we already know this. Mm. As infants, we need every bit of help that we can get. And then we start to mature. Then we enter into our 20s and we start being self-sufficient. And then there is a time and space to where we're helping other people. And then... as we begin to hit into retirement and into our 70s, that begins to flip again. And I think that there's something in us that simply says, I've been independent for so long, I'm going to hold on to this independence. And it is a life or death issue for me that I will not give up my independence. And yet, there is a internal and sometimes even an external struggle that demonstrates I actually need assistance, but yet we don't like to come face to face with this issue. We don't like to talk about this issue, and we definitively don't like to plan or prepare for the issue that I'm going to need help. So therefore, when we actually have the health incident, we are very unprepared. Our family is even more unprepared. Mm-hmm. We've made no future decisions on what it means that that I now need someone around me and I need someone else to care for me. That can look many different ways of what care means. But estate planning should be a preparation mechanism that gives us the insight and starts getting our wheels turning that says, I got to take care of this. It shouldn't be just something that says, if the incident happens, then I'll deal with it. Or if the incident happens, my kids will deal with it. No, that's called emergency. Emotions are high. People are not thinking clearly. We need a plan. We need a strategy in order to be successful in this unexpected, I'm using air quotes for everyone who can't see me, this unexpected incident. Well, it is expected. It's expected that you have a health incident. It is absolutely expected that you're going to have cognitive ability decline.
Well, with people living as long as they are these days, it seems like it's inevitable for everybody.
Well, that's right. Our medical system is getting better and better. So it's not improving the quality of our life, but it's just saving our life. Right. And I've talked about that on multiple different shows, which is that there's an interesting line curve is that imagine if you raised your hand as high as it could go, that is where your current health is. But if you have a health incident, if you have some sort of a heart attack, you have some sort of something that takes away or puts you into the hospital, if you take your hand and move it down 25%, that becomes your new ceiling or your new best health capability. If you have a second health emergency, now take it from that place and reduce it by 50%. So now you are under 50% of your optimum health level of where you originally started. And if you have a third incident, you are probably at a place to where you need full-time care if it doesn't take your life. And so when someone, specifically as they age, when you have a health incident, it precipitously lowers your health level. So all of this is statistical. This is all found. You can find all of these to be absolutely true, all this information to be true. 75% of us will need help at some time or another, what you said, when we reach 65 or older. And so if we know that there's a 75% chance that we need assistance, don't you think that we should plan for that? Hmm. And what I'm finding is that even clients that I help through the estate planning process still won't take up this issue of saying, what does it look like? Is my family prepared? Well, we run educational programs in my firm on what does it look like to the helpers. So in other words, most of us rely upon our children. If children come in and they're going to take care of us, if indeed I have a health emergency. They're going to do my finances, my health decisions. They're going to get me around. They're going to drive me to doctor's appointments. And yet this is a massive interruption to their life. And the children are ill prepared to match that responsibility. Mm. Now, we do it because we love and honor and respect, but they're not prepared. So we have educational classes just to try to prepare the helpers in anticipating what it means. So right now, there's some new studies out, and they've actually happened in the past 5 years or so, that show that individuals who are 65 or younger, so typically they look at the age range of 55 to 65, in that 10-year gap, 10% of individuals in that age range are already having dementia.
Hmm. Really?
Yes. 10%. 10%. Wow. If you hit 65 and up to 85, so that's a 20-year span, that will go up to 22%. So as soon as you hit 65, 22% of 65-year-olds have some type of dementia already. Hmm. Mild. Okay, so 10% have already severe, 22%. So that's 32% of the population at 65 have some sort of memory issues already in place. Mm. When you get to be 85, the study shows that now it's a third of 85-year-olds have severe dementia. Mm. Okay? So, and Alzheimer's is the most common type of dementia, and that is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. Mm. So these things we need to talk about, and we need to prepare. So if you anticipate living to be 85, you have a 33% chance that you're going to have severe dementia, not just memory issues, but severe. And so if we know this, why are we not preparing for it? And that's really the expect the unexpected, because we need to expect that this is going to be coming down the pike, or that we're going to have a health incident in our 70s that lowers our physical and or mental capacity from that point forward. And yet we still raise our hands and go, oh my gosh, this is such a shock. Really, aging is a shock? And so so that's really what I want to talk about, is what is it that we can do that will assist in preparing for these times. So just a few other few statistics here that I have found. So in one of the more interesting things is that the more education you have, the less likely you are to experience dementia.
The more education.
Yes.
You mean college degree?
College degrees, okay. Yes. Okay. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So if you do not have a college degree, then your statistics go up by it's almost twice as likely that you will have memory issues. So there's something about the learning process, about staying engaged with reading and doing those types of things.
What about watching a lot of TV?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely educational. It depends if you watch PBS, I guess. I don't know, Mark.
Listen to a lot of radio.
Yeah, right. Listen to good educational radio shows. Now, this is way above this is not an area I study other than looking at some of the statistics. which I find fascinating because I deal with a client group. The most common reason people come to me and get estate planning is because they retire. So my average client age group is in their upper 60s. Mm-hmm. So now, if you're into your 70s, they come in with their tail between their legs saying, oh, my gosh, we should have done this ages ago. Even when you retire, it's like, OK, yeah, we know that this has been long outdated.
But again, they're planning for the financial aspect of estate planning, not this care aspect.
And that is probably one of the bigger gaps in estate planning as a whole. And that's my profession's fault. That's not the client's fault, is that is the estate planning attorney you're using, are they walking you through questions that will help you think through what happens if indeed I am in the expected condition of having a health incident, needing money, having someone else take care of my bills, having someone else access my funds, having someone else make medical decisions for me. And so I really find that it is a attorney problem, because most attorneys, I've talked about this over and over on my radio show, most attorneys are document producers. They are not relational. They don't stay engaged with clients. And so one of the power parts of my firm, that at least what I believe is powerful, is that as we stay engaged, we take you on a journey of answering these questions and getting more and more prepared. I will admit, 10 years ago, I did not know as much about estate planning as what I know now. Now, you may look at that and go, oh, I can't believe he just admitted that. Actually, that's a good thing to admit, meaning I'm growing in how I prepare my clients. I'm growing in my wisdom. I'm growing in my knowledge. And all of that gets passed off to my clients that stay engaged. What if I created a document 10 years ago? And now I have all this new information. Now I have all this new programming and educational opportunities for family members to be prepared. If I was a document producer, my clients would never know about my increased knowledge because I just gave them a document. Mm. So one of the powerful things of a relationship is that we get to go on this journey together. Unfortunately, I watch my clients go through this, and I learn more when I help a client through the transition. And so then that becomes value added for every other client that hasn't been on that journey yet. So when you look at the estate planning world in general, and they have the here's your document mentality, this is the gap that is being produced, which is I'm learning more. So how do my clients benefit from that wisdom and knowledge? In my system, they do. But in the traditional system, they do not. Mm-hmm. So we already know that there's going to be health incidences in our life. We know this. Even people of faith, we still need to prepare for the worst case scenario so that we are prepared, so that our family is prepared. So there are some statistics for us to ponder, is that Alzheimer's, memory issues, it is becoming a bigger topic, and there are more people facing this issue than ever before in our society. And that does not even include what happens if you have the standard heart attack at 75 that sets you back.
Sure. Stroke.
Yes, and so that's the 75% of us will need assistance at some point, versus at age 85, a third of 85-year-olds already have cognitive impairment. So we need to do a better job. Number one, just talking about it. So hopefully this program is just the first step of getting us thinking, but then you got to have action. You got to be able to then say, okay, fine. Maybe there's a gap in me being prepared in this circumstance. And so what do I do? Well, the first thing you do is you actually take a step to ensure that your estate plan is ready to meet this challenge, because that's what good estate planning should do. It should meet this challenge head on.
Expecting the unexpected in your estate planning. That's what we're addressing this week. And if you're intrigued by Paul's approach and want to find out more, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Paul is reminding us to expect the unexpected and how we can work that into our estate planning. Now, we always hear about the financial issues when we pass away, but again, preparing for when you might have a sickness or a disability of some kind in this life, you can prepare for that with your estate planning. So what kind of documents that aspect of this do we need for this kind of planning?
Right. So as an estate planner, we need documents. So I was just talking about that most estate planning attorneys are document producers, no relationship. Well, we had to have those documents. We need to have the legal sufficiency to ensure that we're going to be well taken care of during our lifetime. I tell clients all the time, my first responsibility is to ensure your personal safety and that you are well taken care of during your lifetime. Then when you die, I'll make sure that your kids or beneficiaries, charities, whoever you're leaving things to, I'll make sure that they're well taken care of. So the first thing that we always need to do is ensure the safety of the client. How do we do that? So that kind of gets into the two major documents that people think of if we talk about estate planning or dealing with issues surrounding estate planning, which is a will and a trust. So wills are a death instrument only. They have no power or no effect during your lifetime. So therefore, that document does not assist us. That's more of what you were talking about, which
just is when you pass away.
Yeah, that's only when you die, and it's dealing with our money issues only. Who gets what? And then it has court instructions in it. So it names a personal representative or an executor. It tells us who gets what we have, and then it gives us court instructions. Okay, so a will then doesn't help us during this conversation. A revocable living trust may assist us when it's done well. Notice the caveat, when it's done well. Most trusts that I have reviewed do little more than just act like a financial power of attorney, to be honest. So they don't incorporate good, clear instructions to a trustee of how to use the money. They just simply say, use my money for my benefit. Well, that's what a financial power of attorney does. So most trusts that I review still are not a good solution. They should be a superior solution, but they rarely are. And so it depends, again, on what attorney you are ever using and whether this is a part of their focus and whether or not they are actually preparing the document with the thought process of, I'm supposed to protect you. This document is supposed to protect you during your lifetime. So a revocable living trust, revocable means that you have full power and control so you can change it as long as you are not having those cognitive impairments. So you're in full control of your finances and the decisions made in your trust. That's the revocable. Living, well, that's where we're getting to in today's conversation. Revocable living trust. The living component should be a very rich portion of your instrument, of the trust. but it rarely is. As a matter of fact, it's in the dang title, revocable living trust, meaning this is supposed to contain living instructions. What happens during my lifetime to protect me? But again, most trusts are very rudimentary and they do not highlight this area. So therefore, even if you have estate planning done, even if you have a trust, there is a high likelihood that the living component of your trust is not doing its job to the best of its ability. So how would you know? Well, contact us at through our website, legacyandfaith.com. Let us look at it. Let us take a peek at what the instructions are, and we'll let you know, yep, this is actually a really good document, and it actually has the information I would like to see in it, or nope, there's missing components. The living instructions are waning. They are not there. They're not going to supply enough information to your successor trustee. Mm. So a trust should be a proper instrument to protect somebody. Now, we also need a financial power of attorney. I alluded to that. That is, what happens if I am unable to manage my own life and someone else has to step in? That would technically be an agent compared to a successor trustee in a revocable living trust. So what power and authority is your financial power of attorney giving to your agent? Typically, that's going to give you accessibility, the agent accessibility to your bank accounts, to your IRAs, to your investments, the ability to sell property if indeed that was necessary. It should include things such as apply for Medicaid, apply for other governmental entities, do tax returns, cancel credit cards, enter into safety deposit boxes, actually put things into your trust if you had a trust already, but there was something caught in your name. So a financial power of attorney covers assets or liabilities that are in your personal name. So if I have a checking account and if it's already in my revocable living trust, then my financial power of attorney doesn't cover it. My successor trustee already has that authority. But if it's in my personal name, that's where my financial power of attorney may then come into play. Have you ever tried to cancel a Comcast subscription that is not in your name? So it's a nightmare.
Or just get the bill lowered.
Or just have the bill redirected to your address so that you can pay it. So anything with Comcast is horrible. But I won't tell you exactly how I truly feel. But most utility companies are horrible. Even just changing the electric bill or
just
other
getting
things.
A hold of somebody on the phone is terrible.
Yeah. So that's a whole nother radio show. It's not mine.
The phone
So. But there is a real problem. So a financial power of attorney needs to have all of these different powers in it so that your agent can have the easiest time possible. Most financial power of attorneys that I have reviewed are far older than 10 years old. That is just way too long. Mm. It is way too long. 3 years is what banks want to see, no more than 3 years. Otherwise, they got to send it to their legal department, which I think is a hoax. They don't have one. But they claim they have to send it someplace. And it's going to take a week or two before authority is given over that bank account, if not longer. So that's a necessary document. Make sure someone has the ability to care for your finances. And then healthcare power of attorney is important. We need legal authority for someone to make medical decisions, speak to doctors, not do procedures or to do procedures, change your medications, authorize change in medications, authorize medication pickups. All these different things are in the healthcare realm. You need a healthcare power of attorney. We use a mental health power of attorney because it's a different statute in Washington state. Hmm. So therefore, we actually have healthcare standalone mental health document. And then there's multiple other documents. There's also a living will or an end of life document. That's what happens if I am on life support and I want to be removed or I don't want to be removed. So those documents are all important as we talk about this. And, you know, one of the bigger deals, I've mentioned it already in the show, which is the people that you name, the people you're going to rely upon, are they already trained? Do they even know that they are supposed to step into this role? Have you discussed what you want if they step into this role? So the document is just one step, and it is a necessary and it's a good step. It's a foundational step. However, how ready is your family? Have you selected the right person? So the right person might be to manage your finances, might be different than the one who handles your healthcare decision. But have you selected somebody who's in the middle of a life difficulty already? Are they raising young kids? What would it look like if they had to quit their job and take care of you? Are they?
And don't just expect the spouse is going to do this.
Oh, yes. And if you're married, then we just lean upon the spouse. But you know what? That begins to wear down the spouse. People who have long-term problems, the average is a two-year span. So is your spouse ready to take over the finances if you do them? Is your spouse ready to take over the cooking if you're the one who cooks? Is the spouse ready to do the laundry when you've done it the entire 50 years of marriage or plus? And so are you ready inside the household, let alone is your family ready? And can your family even really step up and do this? So all of this is necessary conversation and preparedness. The documents we start with, but it's far more than that. And you need to have an estate planning firm that knows how to lead you through the discussions and has an educational program already in place and ready for the family, because it is a critical component.
And that's definitely what you what focus on at your firm, Planning with Purpose.
Yep.
Expecting the Unexpected, the subject this week, just kind of scratching the surface here. Another show to come in this series. And if you are intrigued by Paul's approach and would like to know more information about his services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and much more, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.